Now, the White House has released President Trump's proposed budget for the 2021 fiscal year. It calls for $4.8 trillion in spending next year, boosting investment in areas like defense and border security. It also outlines a planned savings of more than $4 trillion over the next decade, in part by making cuts to Medicaid, the Environmental Protection Agency, and foreign aid. The White House predicts an annual federal spending deficit would continue for the next 15 years. Roy Myers is here to help us take a closer look at the plan. He's a professor of political science and affiliate professor of public policy at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. He also worked in the Congressional Budget Office from 1981 until 1990 and is the author of The Handbook of Government Budgeting. Roy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hi, Rob. Good to talk to you again.
Before we look into the details here, let's talk about this document itself. On one hand, it's probably not going to get passed by Congress. On the other hand, people say it's an important symbol of presidential priorities. How seriously do we take something like this?
Well, the agencies that helped put it together put a lot of weight on it in that they're going to have to go to their appropriations committees, at least for their discretionary budget, and ask for an appropriation for next year. And since the president has a veto, his position on those kind of appropriations levels are really important. And it's going to be up to Congress and the president to find agreement, one would hope, sooner rather than later on those issues. For a number of the mandatory spending proposals, which would require Congress to pass new laws, I think it's fair to say that most of what the president has proposed will be disregarded, especially in the House, because that's controlled by Democrats.
The House and Senator Mike Enzi, a Republican who chairs the Budget Committee, says he's not going to hold a hearing even on the budget, saying Congress simply doesn't pay attention to the president's budget, no matter who's in office. So is that about right when it comes to where we are today on this presidential budget in Congress?
Yes, and I think that's unfortunate. Not that I'm at all endorsing what President Trump has suggested in his budget, but it is the job of Congress to prepare a budget. It took on that responsibility under the Congressional Budget Act. And unfortunately, both the House and Senate in recent years have neglected to fulfill that responsibility. In part, they've decided not to put together a comprehensive budget because they've reached these two-year deals with both President Trump and prior to that President Obama on discretionary spending levels, adjusting the caps that had been put in place in the 2001 Budget Control Act. So since they've reached that kind of agreement, and since it's so difficult to get agreement across the aisle these days, given the partisan polarization we have, they basically have decided not to do their own budget work. So in one sense, actually, the executive branch is a little more functional than the congressional branch is right now.
Yeah, in effect, it seems like we've had this series of deadlines and debt ceiling increases and stopgap spending bills. It seems like a strange way to run a budget.
Oh, it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible, no question. I don't think there's any good reason for doing it. One of the motivations for this process, though, was the concern by people who have been very concerned about high deficits that inaction would be dangerous. So they set in motion these artificial triggers and deadlines where if Congress wouldn't take action, then bad things would happen, like, for example, the shutdown that has occurred a couple times in the last decade. It would be much better, of course, if both sides, both Democrats and Republicans, and both Congress and the president would agree to do their job and negotiate seriously, looking at accurate numbers and try and reach compromises here and there.
We're looking at the White House budget proposal that just came out. Roy Myers is with us from the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. You mentioned the deficit and the overall debt, Roy. Looking at this budget proposal from the president, what do you see when it comes to their projections of when the annual deficit might go away?
Well, first of all, their projections are based on overly optimistic assumptions about the rate of growth of the economy and about interest rates. The estimate of growth over the next decade from the Trump administration is about 3% a year. And if you look on the other hand at the Congressional Budget Office's estimates, which are much closer to what the average private sector forecaster says, they're saying that growth would be 2.2 to 1.7% a year. And that's based in part by the demographics of this country. As we are aging, there are fewer people in the workforce, and in particular, if we have lower immigration, there'll be even fewer people in the workforce. And so the Trump administration's assumption that the economy will grow so strongly, which of course boosts revenues and reduces spending, but that also in that case that interest rates would stay at the remarkably low level they've been at in recent years, that just doesn't add up. So I think it's, you know, and by the way, this is not the first time that a president has used rosy assumptions to make a budget forecast look better. But it's somewhat more problematic now because our deficits are so large. I mean, we have $1 trillion deficits as far as the eye can see. If you look at the Congressional Budget Office's projections of deficits over the next 10 years, they would average $1.3 trillion a year if there are no policy changes. And that adds up. At some point, that's not going to be affordable, and we're going to have to make some really serious changes in our policies.
Now, looking at budgets past and present, it's not as unusual to run a really big deficit when the economy is doing really badly, like in the first few years after the Great Recession. But this is not that. This is after some years of sustained, decent growth. What's going on that's leading these big annual deficits, even though the economy is decent?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. In fact, if you looked at the deficit that was run during the Great Recession, it was far too small. We could have cut taxes more and especially spent more and gotten the economy on the ball much faster. Right now, if you look at the combination of federal, state, and local government policies, they're actually stimulative. They are causing the economy to run at a rate that is faster than it can sustain over the long term. That's called potential GDP. And a lot of that comes from the federal government tax cuts that were put in place in 2017, and then the spending increases that were pretty large last year. Political scientists used to talk about something called the political business cycle, and the argument was that politicians, particularly presidents, try to make the economy as strong as possible in the year they're running for re-election. And I have to say there's an aspect of that right now.
Let's look at some of the spending details. Social safety net programs like Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security are a big part of any budget talks. Here's President Trump talking about some of those issues in his State of the Union address last week.
And we will always protect your Medicare, and we will always protect your Social Security, always.
What does the budget proposal do with those programs?
It doesn't touch Social Security, except there's some programs, proposals that I don't fully understand yet, having to deal with the Supplemental Security Income Program and disability insurance. But most of the cuts that are in that area are in the Medicare area, and almost all of those are reductions in the payments made to providers, to doctors, to hospitals, and to manufacturers and retailers of what's called durable medical equipment. So I would, and in addition, there's a fair amount of so-called fraud, waste, and abuse reduction in the budget. I hope that that would actually be carried out. It's often a difficult thing to do. The big difference, however, in the health care area is that the president goes after Medicaid big time, and that he is proposing some flexibility for the states, which has actually been proposed already in a rule that's been drafted by Health and Human Services that would allow the withdrawal of some services and the reduction of eligibility of the program for people who were brought into it under the Affordable Care Act. That's a very controversial rule in particular because it would allow states who wanted to require what they call a community engagement, which is a euphemism for requiring work or reporting that you've worked to be eligible for Medicaid. And so that's going to be a huge fight because it's unclear whether the statute that created Medicaid would, in fact, allow that requirement to be put in place. The one other thing I say about health care is that there's actually an opportunity for a deal between the Democrats and the Republicans in the sense of reducing payments for prescription drugs in the Medicare program. You know, there are bills in the House and the Senate. The president's numbers are very close to the Senate's numbers, and the real political question here is whether the Democrats and Republicans want to compromise on that issue this year and claim credit for it jointly, or they want to disagree about it and run on it during the election.
Talking to Roy Myers, professor of political science and public policy at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, looking at President Trump's proposed budget for the next fiscal year. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What areas do you think the government should spend less on or more on? What about tax policy? Is the federal deficit and overall debt something that concerns you? What do you think of what you've heard of President Trump's proposals? Or do you have a question about what this proposal does? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Roy Myers of the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, formerly part of the Congressional Budget Office. We're looking at President Trump's budget proposal for 2021. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about what is in this presidential budget proposal? If the budget were yours to write, where would you invest, spend more? Where would you cut? What do you worry about being cut in the future? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Staying, Roy, with the issues we were just talking about, the Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, I want to give a listen to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi talking about the budget at a press conference today.
We want to see balance in all of this. We want to see where we can find savings. Let's subject everything we spend to harsh scrutiny so that the results for the American people are the best that they can be. But don't get in front of an audience and say, I'm here to protect Medicare, Social Security, and people, and we say Medicaid too, and then put a budget like this forward.
Right, those changes to Medicaid and Medicare you were talking about, the block grants, some people call them, for Medicaid, the changes in reimbursement rates for providers under Medicare, is that something that people who use those services would feel, either directly or indirectly?
Medicaid, definitely. That would be a huge hit. For Medicare, that's a very difficult question to answer without seeing all the details of what CMS, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, would implement in their regulations. As you know, as a practical matter, we do have to be concerned about the prices we pay to medical providers because they're very, very high compared to the prices that other countries pay. You know, I think there's one thing that Speaker Pelosi left out, though, and that has to do with the administration's participation in a suit that seeks to declare the Affordable Care Act unconstitutional. And, of course, if that were to happen, that would be a massive change. If you look at the president's budget, he counts some savings in there for implementing what is called his health reform vision, which I suppose is supposed to be a replacement for the Affordable Care Act if in fact the courts declare it to be unconstitutional. But there's zero details about what that vision would look like.
Let's bring on a caller now. Dion is with us in La Crosse. Dion, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Dion?
My question is, I was wondering if the expert could talk about how the tax policies of 2018 and the national debt, the increase in national debt, how that leads to a transfer of wealth based on the interest paid on those debts from the middle class to the wealthy class.
Dion, thanks for the call. Roy, thoughts on the impact of the tax changes in 2018 and the balance of wealth in this country?
Yeah, the law that's popularly known as the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was actually adopted in 2017, but it clearly has a very disproportionate benefit given to the wealthy. This tax law was very unbalanced compared to previous ones, and of course some previous tax cuts, and particularly in Republican administrations, were focused on the upper strata of payers. So, you know, this is a major addition to the existing inequality in the country. And for that matter, of course, it adds to the deficit. So to the extent to which it eventually produces pressure to reduce the deficit, then the question becomes, are those deficit reductions created by cutting programs that benefit people that are in the middle class or lower class?
Dion, thanks for the call. And there is a concern about safety net programs in the president's budget. What do we see on things that tend to be a safety net, especially for people in the lower income levels?
There's consistent with a rule proposed for food stamps. They would cut back food stamps, and there maybe 3 to 4 million people would lose benefits. That's pretty significant. There's another proposal out there that's, again, highly controversial regarding the so-called public charge rule, which people who are seeking to come into the country or seeking to gain legal permanent resident status or citizenship under this public charge rule would be denied those improvements in their status had they taken advantage of government safety net programs, or if they were trying to get into the country, if they were perceived as possibly being in that position. So that again, is extremely controversial, and there's litigation about it right now.
Let's go back to our callers. Kelly is with us in Cascade. Kelly, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Good program. So you were asking if kind of where we would put our money if we had a say in the budget. And I am a healthcare professional, a climate action coach, and a mother of two children in grade school and middle school. And that tells you probably where I would put my money. But I think if we don't have a strong educational foundation and system, if we don't have a thriving green spaces and a thriving green economy, and we don't have healthy individuals, we really don't have a solid future for our country.
Kelly, thanks for the call. Roy, we've touched on health already. What do we see in the budget in terms of environment and education?
Well, as usual, this administration is seeking to eviscerate the EPA. There's a 27% cut in its budget. Now, Congress has not gone along with those kind of cuts in the last couple of years. But, of course, the reality is that the administration of EPA has made an incredible number of changes to environmental regulations. And so that its budget has been threatened probably is not as meaningful as it otherwise might be, because those regulations are having somewhat of a similar impact on the quality of the environment. On education, there really isn't that much in this budget compared to, say, some previous budgets by previous presidents. There's a very small program for a so-called education freedom voucher, which is a private scholarship program. And there are some cuts proposed in student loan programs. I think if you wanted to take the caller's perspective and broaden it out into a number of the other areas of the budget where we consider that we might possibly make smart investments in our future, a lot of those investments are made in the so-called non-defense discretionary side of the budget. And the cuts over the long term in this budget are really very remarkable. There's something that they call a two-penny plan, which is starting in fiscal year 22, a 2% cut a year in the total amount of money for these non-defense discretionary programs. And that would mean that if you look at that total now of those programs, that's 3.3% of the economy, and it would be halved to 1.6% in just 10 years. I can tell you the Congress is not going along with that. But what it does is it shows that the administration would be making progress on reducing the deficit. So it's quite unrealistic.
Kelly, thanks for that call. Roy, in our last minute or two, a really controversial item in past standoffs with Congress has been over funding for a border wall. What do we see in this new budget there?
Actually, the president has asked for less money than he's asked for the last couple of years. And what's really going on here is actually in the appropriations bill that was agreed to just a couple months ago, Congress basically blinked. The Democrats in the House blinked and said, we're going to appropriate less money for the wall, but we're going to allow you to get away with reprogramming and transferring money like you did in the year before to continue wall construction. And they did that in part because maybe blinked was unfair because it's hard to actually these days control a president who wants to use his powers very aggressively because members of Congress have a hard time getting standing in court and able to in order to sue. The other point about the Department of Homeland Security spending is that the president has asked for about twice as much money as we spent last year on dealing with unaccompanied children. And then he's asked for more detention beds and more ICE agents. So as you might expect, that's going to be highly controversial.
Roy, I will watch to see how this is received in the weeks to come. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Sure, my pleasure.
We've been talking to Roy Myers, professor of political science and public policy at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, formerly with the Congressional Budget Office. He joined us for a look at President Trump's budget proposal for the 2021 fiscal year. As we've heard, that probably won't be the blueprint for a future budget. The House Democrats say they won't go for it, and a key Republican senator on a key budget committee says they won't be holding hearings on it. So it seemed seen as a blueprint for a vision for the president, especially in an important election year. You can join us with your reactions. Tweet us at Central Time WPR.